Welcome to Books and Beyond with your host, Alison. Join us for half an hour of information, entertainment, reading recommendations, and beyond. Brought to you by Auckland Libraries.
I know this girl, and she works in a library.
Nō mai, haere mai, kia ora, and welcome to our Books and Beyond Literary Lounge with Alison and Inika. Kia ora, Inika.
Kia ora, Alison. How are you?
Oh, I'm well, thanks, and it's good to be back in the studio.
Really
isn't
good,
it?
Yeah.
Yes, without the beach towels. It's great. Now, look, on today's show, we're going to talk about what we've been reading, and we should have time to tell you a little bit about our to-be-read lists, and then we'll have the odd hot tip to share along the way.
Absolutely.
So, look, I'd like to get started. It's one that we've both read, and it's the book is called Shuggy Bane, and it's by Douglas Stewart. Now, Shuggy Bane is the debut novel by the Scottish-American writer Douglas Stewart, and it won the Booker Prize last year. Now, it's a coming-of-age novel, and it tells the story, basically, of the youngest of three children, and his name is Shuggy, and he's growing up with his alcoholic mother, Agnes, in the 1980s, in that Thatcher era post-industrial working class of Glasgow, Scotland. Mm. Now, Shuggy is a nickname, and it's either short for or long for the name Hugh. And we were just saying, we wondered if that's a common nickname.
Yeah, it's not one I'd heard before, but
no, me neither, but it may be that because we don't live over there. So now, look, this is a really heartbreaking story. It's very raw and it's unflinchingly honest, and it's a look at poverty, urban poverty. We see just the entire communities that are destroyed by the closure of the mines and the shipyards under Margaret Thatcher's leadership. And these communities that were once strong and proud are basically reduced to poverty and despair, where, you know, the cracks are filled by alcohol and drugs and the bingo hall.
Yeah, the bingo hall.
Yeah. And Shuggy, he's a lovely boy, but he's very lonely and he's quite unusual. So we learn sort of slowly in the book that he's got very strong feminine characteristics.
Yes.
There's some sort of funny but awful moments where the neighbours are heard to say, "Oh, look, it's Liberace," you know, and you just think, "Oh, God."
Yeah.
But he's unconditionally supportive of his mum, Agnes, who's an outgoing, glamorous woman. And poor Agnes hasn't had much luck with men. But really what her undoing is her addiction to alcohol.
Yeah, that's right.
It's so sad, isn't it? And she gets a small benefit payment from the government, but most of it goes on those cheap tins of beer that she buys. Her kitchen cupboards are basically empty more often than not. And, you know, if you're trying to feed three kids on very little, it's almost impossible. Mm,
especially with the addiction on top of that.
Yeah, that's right. And then what I found also really sad, you would have as well, that the only people in this small mining town just out of Glasgow, the only people who seemed to have any power really were the taxi drivers. And they knew where all the vulnerable and desperate women were, and they were bribing women basically for sex, basically with groceries and alcohol. It's just, it was awful, wasn't it? And such a gritty life.
Very gritty. There was a lot of men taking advantage of pretty desperate situations in this book, weren't
they? Yeah, that's right. And it was making me think that, you know, if you're a mum, you'd do anything to put food on the table for your kids, wouldn't you?
That's right.
You know, and what a sad situation. And, you know, I was thinking this is one of the most powerful, raw and heartfelt books I've ever read. But I'm thinking that the listeners might worry that it's just totally grim, almost like, you know, the misery memoir genre. Like, do you remember Angela's Ashes?
I do.
So depressing.
Yes.
But it's not really like that, I don't think, because I think there's hope.
I think there's enough hope in the story for change, or there's enough sort of shafts of light in there.
That yes, sort of the
pokes through that.
Some glimmers of light, aren't there? And Shuggy dreams of becoming a hairdresser, and but he at one stage observes the young people going into the hairdressing school, and it's very sad. He's watching from the bus stop over the road, I think, and just dreams of that. So as you say, there are still hopes and dreams.
That's right. I still hold hope for Shuggy.
Yeah, that's right. Yes, yeah. And now I'm going to be a bit controversial, if I may.
Oh, please do.
Yeah, we like a bit of that. So Shuggy Bane, it's written by a man, and its protagonist is a young man. I seriously, seriously considered putting this in our International Women's Day show that we did a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah, because I sort of see the book, I reckon it's a love letter to all the women in those mining and industrial towns in the UK who lived through that era of Thatcherism. Mm. They fought to keep food on the table, feed their families, and they were often, I guess they were probably really despised often by the ruling classes too. And so many of these women would have died way before their time, you know, due to diseases of poverty.
Yes, absolutely. And am I right in saying that Glasgow still has a terrible mortality rates for people in their country, don't they?
Yes, I think you're
right. Particular in the UK, yeah.
Yes.
Shortened lives from those, as you say, those diseases of poverty and also, yeah, sort of widespread alcoholism, which is so sad.
Yeah.
I definitely think it could have been a contender, yeah. I mean, we had lots to talk about, but yes. Yeah, it could definitely have been a contender. It really, there's really two main protagonists. I mean, you've got Shuggy on one side who's doing his best to care for his mum, but Agnes is your other, you know, she's really at the heart of the novel, isn't she?
Yes.
And, you know, what you see Agnes and the other women in the book's real strength and resilience as much as they can in these grinding situations that they end up in, but also ultimately how stuck they were by those circumstances that were so beyond their control.
Yes.
You know, there's just so much pressure on them. I really found Agnes was such a vividly painted character. She's tragic, you know, she's a tragic figure, but you know, you hold so much hope for her that everything will turn out right for her. And I heard that Douglas Stewart based her on his own mother and his own experiences,
right.
And I think you can really feel that in the book. There's a duty of care, and there's real love pouring out for the women in this book.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And because Agnes had been very loved by her own parents, and that comes through in the book, doesn't it?
Yes.
Even though they were poor as well.
That's right. I mean, they were poor but more grounded. I mean, they had sort of, by the time the Thatcher era comes along, they're sort of more at the end of their, they've always worked very,
they've
very hard.
They've had jobs,
yes. Though. Yeah, that's right. I mean, Agnes is sort of brought up as she's kind of spoiled and cherished child, and really then the damage comes later in her teens when she is sort of, there's a expectation that she'll be married quickly and that she'll settle down and have a family. She does marry a fairly good man, but then her addiction issues come through and she ends up with a man who's not at all like this first husband that
he's
she
not
has.
Good for her at all.
No, that's right. She ends up in this kind of rotating cycle of these manipulative and abusive men. She's a very proud character as well. She's always trying to keep up the appearances. You know, she's got her lippy on and her head high, wearing her best tatty coat. You know, was flash once, not anymore.
Yes, that faded glory.
Faded glory,
And it was so sad that she dreamed of having a place with its own front door, and it made me think, oh man, you know, the dreams that people have.
She did get one in the end, but oh my gosh, that house that she ended up in.
Yes.
Yeah.
And she wanted to plant a few little flowers at the front door, and it's just enough to make you weep, isn't it? And
that was a great scene, wasn't it, when she went and nicked the flowers out of the council planting.
Yes.
And just put them in her front yard to keep to keep everybody's spirits up.
Yes, yeah. But then unfortunately the other woman in the street thought that, you know, she had ideas above a station. Well, who are you to be, you know, acting all la-di-da around us and all that sort of thing?
Yeah.
And then what also was so sad that Shuggy dreamed, his dream, or apart from being a hairdresser, he'd really like to have a bath that he could fill up so that he could be warm.
Oh,
you know,
yes.
Just, oh, my God.
There were some beautiful scenes that I'll never forget in this book. Yeah, that scene of that that summer day where he does get the pool of his dreams made of an old fridge filled up that Agnes fills up with water.
Yes.
And then there's these heartbreaking images. I can actually really see this as a movie.
Me too.
You'd be crying while you watched it.
Yes, it's got the makings of a film.
Definitely got the makings of an epic film. Yeah.
Yes.
There's, you know, she does have these periods of sobriety in her life, so you get this glimpse of, you know, the woman that she might have blossomed into had circumstances been different, and you really hope that she's going to be able to make it stick for her and her kids.
Mm.
I mean, just seeing her little boy caring for his mum, you know, her waking up in an absolute stupor, and then him sitting there in his, already dressed in his uniform.
And he'd be combing her hair and that sort of stuff. Yes.
Oh. So sad.
Yes. What an amazing book.
It was really beautiful. That's it, sad, but so beautiful. Yeah. Really unforgettable. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, should we travel away from Glasgow? We'll go through the Firth of Clyde, down through the Irish Sea to the Republic of Ireland. Now, I'm going to confess, I had to look that up. I am hopeless that you agree, but I wanted to make that connection. The first book I'd like to share with you is Strange Flowers by Irish author Donal Ryan. This was published just at the end of last year. You'll find it in our adult fiction collection. It's also available on Overdrive as an ebook, and it's an audiobook on CD as well. We're following the Gladney family, Paddy and his wife Kit. They work and live on their landlord's property in this small rural village in Tipperary, and it's set in the 1970s. Now, they live quite a quiet, sparse life, but there's a lot of love in the household. So their lives are totally rocked when their much-loved 20-year-old daughter, Mull, disappears from home without explanation. And she's not seen again or heard from again for 5 years.
Oh.
Now, she returns out of the blue after these 5 years, and she reveals really only tiny amounts of where she's been. She's been in London, that's all we really know. A few days after she returns back up in the village, there's a young Englishman called Alex also shows up, and it causes a bit of a stir in the community. It's revealed that she's been living in London, but she's now married. She has a baby son, and not only is her husband English, but he's also black, and this is a bit of an anomaly in this small 1970s rural village, as you can imagine. Now, the plan was to bring her back to London and to bring her back to their home in Notting Hill, where they've been living with Alex's large, lovely family. But Alex and baby Joshua end up settling into the home of Paddy and Kit with Moll. And out of this marriage, which, you know, to heads up, it's not all quite as it seems. There's things going on below the surface in this marriage. This new family unit kind of blossoms with baby Joshua firmly at the centre. So you've got baby, four caring, loving adults. There's some really beautiful depictions of caregiving and particularly fatherhood in this book. There's a lovely relationship that builds between Paddy, Mo's dad, and his son-in-law, Alex. They've got a shared love of working on the land, and they sort of learn from each other. And they share this appreciation for those quiet blessings of home and family life, and that's really beautifully depicted in this book. So it's a real balm for the soul at times.
Mm.
Yeah. Now, you get these sort of varying reactions of the community to Alex and having Alex in their in the village. You get sort of a bit of exploration of that. There are some racist sort of small town attitudes from a few that cause a few strifey moments. But most of the people in the village are quite curious, and they're cautiously welcome once they get to know him. And he's got this very warm nature, and he's really willing to throw himself into life in the village. He's attending church. He joins the hurling team, which is a sort of I wasn't sure what hurling was, but it's like a Gaelic form of hockey sort of thing. And he attempts to learn Gaelic too, so he really endears himself to the community and is sort of embraced by the community pretty quickly. There's a section in the second half where you kind of jump in time. You end up, Joshua the son is now a young man, and he is a writer, an aspiring writer, and he's sharing his writing with his new lover. So you get this sort of story within a story, a sort of parable based on a biblical character of a blind man whose sight's restored. And in his story, he then wishes he hadn't seen his sight because life was beautiful for him as a blind man, more beautiful. Now, this is a beautifully written bit, but it maybe doesn't sit as well within the rest of the story. So, yeah, you may or may not go for that. This is a small package book, but with lots of emotional heft. It's got that Irish lyricism in the writing. There's a bit of a sway in the storytelling, and this timeline kind of sways forward and back a bit. He's got these long, lilting sentences, and it really swings you into the scenes, and lots of gorgeous sensory descriptions. Quite intoxicating writing, I think. You know, this is really beautiful writing, quiet, beautiful writing. The characters and their stories are unfolded slowly across the book, but there's also some surprising key plot reveals right up to the last chapter, so you've got to hang in there. It's worth the journey. Definitely worth the journey.
Yeah.
And there's other books of his in our collections, two or three other books that you can go and have a look at as well.
It sounds wonderful. I can't wait to read it, actually. And I could almost see it as a film too.
Yeah, it's a beautiful story. Mm, yeah.
Mm. Oh, wonderful. That's exciting. Well, look, let's travel now, a bit more geography, across the Atlantic to New York, but then on to LA.
Cool.
So we're going to do an American book. Now, this is just recently published. It's called Broken People by Sam Lansky, and it's a novel about transformation, basically, which you probably think, what's that mean? So it's funny and it's moving, and it's quite an intimate look at healing through therapy. I've got to admit, though, when I started the book, I thought it was a complete satire or basically a giant piss take, really. Oh, now am I allowed to say piss take on the radio? Hopefully.
2021.
Yeah, I've just said
what can't you say on the radio?
Just said it twice, so sorry about that. But anyway, it's quite funny. It's very funny. It's a novel about a 20-something gay man called Sam, and he's full of insecurity and neuroses. So he moves to LA from New York, hoping to find happiness by moving to a different place. And so he gets invited to a party in the Hollywood Hills, you know, as you do. And he's overhears people talking about a master healer who claims to cure depression and anxiety in just one weekend.
Wow.
Using this technique called open soul surgery. I don't think there's any scalpels involved, but so, and apparently what he has is that one mystical weekend with the healer, or who calls himself a shaman, and whose name is Jacob, by the way, and also, by the way, he looks as though he's just stepped off a golf course in Palm Springs. You know? So anyway, this mystical healer, so one weekend with him apparently achieves as much as 10 years of talking therapy.
Ooh, bargain.
Yeah, so it sounds. And so for these time-poor Hollywood types, they think, oh, this is great. So Sam's intrigued, and so he travels to Portland, Oregon to meet the shaman Jacob, and they meet at a hugely expensive upmarket farm-to-table restaurant, as you do. And so Jacob explains that he operates a clinical practice in the field of transdimensional intercession. So can you see why I thought this is just, they're taking the mic hole, really, aren't they?
Who knows, it's LA.
But yeah, it is LA. So anyway, Sam agrees to attend a healing weekend at Jacob's flash retreat. But it turns out that the vehicle for this transdimensional intercessional healing is actually an edible plant from the Amazonian jungle, which is known for its hallucinogenic properties. So anyway, and this is what opens up the patient to the spirit dimension. So, but I won't go into more detail about it. There's more to the book than first meets the eye. It's very sharply observed, and it does take a scalpel to those who live lives of white privilege, who want to heal but perhaps don't want to put in the work that's really required. So probably leave it at that, but there's a lot to it. It's quite layered. And there's lots of stuff about body image and and particularly in the gay community. So, oh,
sounds really good.
Yeah,
read.
Really, really recommend it.
Cool. Well, we're travelling again. This time we're going to Oz. We're going to Australia. A book that I just ate up last weekend was The Animals in That Country by Laura Jean Mackay. Now, she's based in New Zealand, but she's an Australian author. You'll find it in the Adult Fiction Collection and an Overdrive ebook and e-audio. Now, the main character in The Animals in That Country is Jean. She's a grumpy, rough-as-guts, drinking grandma whose only soft spots are really for her six-year-old granddaughter, Kim, her son, Lee, who's in and out of the book, and the dingo that she's rescued as a puppy, Sue. Now, Jean works as a guide in a zoo park, and she loves translating what the animals might be saying for Kim, even though this is frowned upon, you know, anthropomorphizing, not looked upon well by zookeepers. Now, a pandemic called zoo flu starts making its way across Australia, and it causes humans to be able to understand for the first time what animals are communicating to each other and about the humans that are around them. Now, Jean starts to find out just what those animals are really talking about. Now, she loses her son and granddaughter. They hit the road because they have decided they want to learn the mysteries of the deep from the right whales that are off the coast of Australia. So they're heading to the coast to get enlightenment from the animals. Now, Jean busts Sue the dingo out of her enclosure and they hit the road to get them back. Once you get outside the game park, which has, of course, been a bit more of a controlled atmosphere, it all goes a bit Mad Max. Some people are really enthralled by what the animal's saying and they've started kind of looking on them as mini-gods, but most are terrified and they're doing anything they can to try and keep those thoughts that are unfiltered out of their head because they can't. It's really hard to shut out the noise of the animals that are all around them. Later stages of the disease mean that you're not just hearing mammals, but you're also hearing birds, and then you're hearing this multitude of insects around you as well. Jean and the dingoes, so they have this really interesting relationship. They've got these different needs and skills that kind of fluctuate throughout the book depending on what's going on, and there's this shifting balance of power. It's a really original book. It's very compelling. It's quite bleak. It's got black humour, speculative fiction, I suppose you would describe it as. Lots of raw and tender moments between the humans and animals, and also sometimes between humans and animals. There's this strong filter going through it of family and kinship, and that changing power dynamics of the hierarchy of species as it goes tits up, really, across the nation.
How interesting, having a pandemic as well.
Yeah.
Very current.
That's right. Look, it's really a mind-blowing, fascinating exercise in imagination to hear what the animals are saying and the different ways they communicate, because they're not just communicating through their words, they're communicating through smells and senses and pheromones and all this sort of stuff. I have to say, she covered a lot of different animals. I'm so glad she didn't go there with the snakes because I can't handle those.
Oh, right, yes.
I have to say, you must read this book, but you must also be prepared to never look at tittles the same way again.
Oh, it sounds wonderful.
It's so good.
Yes. Oh, thanks for that. No, that's great. Now, look, we can travel around the world now. We've got a fun story of the innocent abroad, or else we could say the hapless American abroad. And this one is called Less by Andrew Sean Greer, published a couple of years ago. But it won the Pulitzer Prize for fiction in 2018, rightly or wrongly, who knows. And now we've only got this in libraries in hard copy, sadly, but his other books are all available in e-book and hard copy format. So it follows the adventures of a yet-to-be-successful novelist called Arthur Less, who's about to turn 50, and he's recently broken up with his younger, gorgeous boyfriend. So turning 50, gay man, he's full of anxiety and insecurities. And he's got a series of invitations on his desk. Most of them are to low-level literary festivals around the world. Fortunately, none from New Zealand, because ours are, you know, so up there.
Oh, totally.
But the crusher of the invitations is the one that invites him to his ex's wedding to another super hot guy. So we sort of cue major crisis about middle age, love, body image and career. And many of us know that, that crisis. So now Artheless decides that the best thing to do is skip town and uses air miles to attend all the literary festivals that he's been invited to. So Mexico, Morocco, France, Germany, Japan, India, you name it, he goes there. So it's quite hilarious. He has all sorts of missteps and mishaps and misunderstandings along the way. It's a great book, I think, to read if you're looking for something with a little depth, but it's pretty light and breezy. Yeah. I was kind of thinking it was like Mark Twain meets Elizabeth Gilbert.
Yeah, I think that's a good pick, yeah.
Because you'd read it too, hadn't you?
Yes, I read it probably a year and a half ago now, so I'm a little bit hazy on the details, but I remember loving reading it at the time. It was sort of, yeah, light. It had lots of funny elements, a little bit of melancholy and nostalgia. Yeah, it was quite lovely. You really kind of, I really fell in love with Arthur. I thought he was just a lovely character. And I really enjoyed the trip going around with him.
No, it's a good one, isn't it? Yeah. We recommend that.
Absolutely.
So what's on your TBR list?
Well, on my TBR list, unfortunately, I took out too many books just before the lockdown, and this one is the first lockdown, I should say, and now I have to get it back without actually getting to read it.
You do this a lot,
I know,
you?
I've got a problem.
Yeah.
This one's called The Rip King by Lady Hubbard. It was published this year in January, so 2021. It's a historical fiction read, and it opens in the earlier 20th century in a large North American city. The main characters are the black servants or employees of a white couple who've got a long-standing charitable tradition of fostering teenage orphans, particularly black teenage orphans, for the purposes of, and this is in air quotes, civilizing them while putting them to work in the household for minimal pay. Now, the current employees or grown-up employees living in the household started their life this way, and they've stayed on in the household. So when grown-up orphan and current groundskeeper Mr. Sitwell has a bit of an awakening about how his position in life has really been dictated by all these powers that he had nothing to do with, he decides it's time for vengeance. So this is a real counterpoint to the narrative of a passive resistance. So I'm looking forward to seeing how this one plays out. It's available on Overdrive ebook and in the fiction collection as well.
That sounds really, really good. Yes, and lots to unpack there. Now, look, we've got a hot tip today, and that's about our Overdrive collection. And Overdrive, or we have recently added the magazine section to Overdrive. I didn't explain that very well, did
that's
I?
That's all right.
But it means basically now for all your e-magazines, you can browse, borrow and read through your Libby app. And it's fantastic.
Yeah.
I've been loving it. It's so seamless and easy to use, isn't it?
So easy, yeah. You can sort of subscribe so you can get your copies. You can create a little shelf worth of magazines. And, yeah, the reading experience is wonderful.
It's really nice. They look so good, don't they?
Mm.
And, yeah, it's just an absolute improvement.
Yeah.
I imagine the whole app thing for magazines hasn't been easy, but, gee, they seem to have nailed it now, don't they?
Yeah, they have. And this is a great way to save some money as well. I mean, when times are tight, jump on. Why wouldn't you?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. You still get that kind of glossy mag experience.
Yes, and they feel glossy, don't they? Yeah. No, look, it's really, really good. So I'm enjoying my e-mags, I must admit. But I've got heaps to read over the next week. Well, look, to our listeners, just want to say thanks so much for tuning in today. Take care of yourselves and be kind to yourselves, of course, and happy reading. So we bid you haere rā, ka kite anō.
Was brought to you by Auckland Libraries. Find us online at aucklandlibraries.govt.nz and catch the program next Sunday at 9:35 p.m. on 104.6 FM or anytime online at planetaudio.org.nz/books and beyond. Every day, every day, every day.
day. Every day I reckon.